This is the Matador Revisionist History Podcast. The label, as told by the artists who made it, or simply made it all up. On episode 2, Kurt Vile looks back at Smoke Ring for My Halo with the album's producer, John Aniello.
Welcome, everybody, to Matador's Revisionist History Podcast. Today we're on with Kurt Vile and producer John Aniello on the occasion of the 10th anniversary of Smoke Ring for My Halo. So welcome, Kurt, and welcome, John.
Hey.
Yo.
My new joke is, I'm sorry, it's pronounced Agnello.
That's what I used to say.
I know, it's not, but
it's
I like
not.
It.
Now I change it?
No, it's Aniello, but I like, now I fuck with people the other way. It's such an asshole last name
and
to
yellow.
Have. You know what I mean? But Gabe, how do we start? We just start talking and...
I guess I would start by asking Kurt, you know, where you were kind of going into this record in terms of your career, in terms of writing songs, in terms of, you know, your life. I mean, what do you remember about the time around this record?
Yeah, well, it was my second record on Matador. It was going to be my first, like, not exactly mature record, but in another way, yes. Because I don't want to say that my work with my previous, you know, engineer producer, Jeff Ziegler, who lives in Philly, that went,
hey, Jeff.
You know, yeah, hey, Jeff, we love you. We captured some awesome psychedelic stuff and we continued to work together. But those were all people I knew in Philly and like home studios. And he had a really legit home studio and I would record my stuff at home previously. But this was a record to be recorded in studios up in New York that I had never worked with and find a producer who I didn't know, things like that. And they wanted to like try and step up some kind of game. And that's ultimately what we did. It was a, it took longer than, actually it was pretty impressively a good amount of time, but a short amount of time, really, maybe sporadically throughout a year we did it or something, but it was like a growing awesome experience, you know. I already feel my ADD ping pong psyche going all over the place, but you know, I don't know, I didn't know John personally, but I knew he worked with Sonic Youth on our label recently, and he worked with Dinosaur Jr. for a long time, and those were two of my favorite bands. And then I was going on tour with, I had been invited to go on tour with Dinosaur Jr. for their Farm record. That was after they had heard Childish Prodigy. And so we knew things were happening. And then it was perfect because I first met John backstage or out front of the Williamsburg Music Hall or whatever the hell it's called, where we were playing with Dinosaur Jr. for the first time. So it was organic, but still very step it up, you know. I met Kim Gordon that night too, creeping around my merch booth, and it turns out she was a fan of Childish Prodigy. So, and also, wait, just while we're on the subject, Kim heard that I was working with John, and she said the best thing ever. She emailed you while we were there. Remember, John?
Yeah.
And she was like, she's like,
don't fuck this up.
Yeah, she was like, hey, oh my God, we just heard you're working with Kurt Vile on the new record. Me and Louisa love his last record so much. I think she said Louisa, that's Jay Maskus's wife. And she's like, better not fuck it up. The pressure's on.
It was so good. But I'll never forget that night also at the Dino show, because me and my wife, Sharon, we walked backstage to the dressing room, and we came into the dressing room, turned a corner, and that's when we saw Jay. And Kurt was sitting right next to him. And Jay said something like, oh, I can't believe you're here. Your ears must be ringing. And I was like, what do you mean? He goes, oh, we've been talking about you. And Sharon said, oh, have you been talking about me? And Jay said, no. And it was the best intro, because it was just such a funny way to meet. And that was a great night.
That was a great tour in general, because, yeah, Jay is the king of like not saying anything and then like some one liner joke to like sit you down. Like at the very end of that tour, I was like, hey, Jay, like I just awkwardly was trying to give him whatever of my records he didn't have yet. And I was like, hey, Jay, do you have all of my records or something? Or I said, what are my records? Don't you? And he's like, what do you have, 100 records or something? And like would like laughed at me.
Yeah, yeah. So Jay. My other favorite thing about him is he doesn't say goodbye when on the phone. He just hangs up.
Yeah.
It's like at a certain point you'll be talking and it's like, so click. And it's like, all right, we're done.
He'll also like write you back. If you ask him something about gear, he'll write you like long things. Right. But if you say right. something like, man, I love the record. Yeah. Thanks for involving me or whatever. Yeah. You just won't write anything back whatsoever. I finally heard the record. It's amazing.
Yeah. Nothing. Oh, so good. He's so good.
But, so what? We started, we decide we're going to work together. And so that, I don't remember exactly when that J tour was. It was maybe in the winter. Who knows? Do you remember? But it was 2009, late 2009. Because he was, because he put like Childish Prodigy on one of his best of lists, you know, on Pitchfork for the end of the year. So just say it's like, we did some touring after that. And then I remember specifically, I did one solo tour in like late February or early March. And, you know, I was getting ready. I remember I wrote that song, Life's a Beach, on stage at Soundcheck. I was opening for Panda Bear, and I knew I was going to go into the studio with you. And by March, we were going in the studio, basically, to work together. And we did 1 week. You know, I was like a kid in a candy store. You took me before you took me to different studios we could use. You took me to Sear Sound in New York. You took me to Magic Shop in New York. You took me to Water Music in Hoboken or whatever. And I picked. I was like, how about 1 week at the Magic Shop and 1 week at Water Music? So anyway, in March, we did that. And I went home after those 2 weeks. I thought maybe we'd be done. I went home and had a baby.
Amazing.
And then next thing you know, we had to keep physically gave birth to the baby. No, and then we had to keep going back into the record, which of course that made sense. But I was pretty green at the time, knowing if it would be done or thinking about the budget or something. So in my mind, I was like, is this my shot? Okay, well, let's try to make this work. But luckily, we got to keep tweaking it, and it was beautiful.
And it was pretty much fluid, which was really great. Kurt's heard me tell this story, but, you know, our first day at the Magic Shop, you know, we'd never worked together. And it was Kurt and Mike.
Yeah, just Mike to start. Mike sang the drummer.
To start, yeah. And I guess the song, it was Laughing Stock was the first song, which ended up being on the EP after. And we got sounds, and then Kurt, you know, I said, all right, you want to start? I had to talk back, you know, you want to start tracking the song? And Kurt was like, hey, give me 10 minutes. I want to work out a couple of things, figure something out. And then, you know, like 15 minutes came by, I came back in. He's like, I need another couple of minutes. And this went on for a little bit of time. And then at one point I was like, is he writing the song? And I just got a super like, uh-oh. But in fact, it wasn't the case. He was just tweaking it. And my whole point about this was that we did spend, you know, a good time like trying things. Like, you know, I was telling Kurt at one point, you know, I have a rough where we broke out the Mellotron. They had this old school like Beatles Mellotron. And we tried that on Baby's Arms. And I have rough mixes of Kurt just trying to figure out parts. And, you know, it was actually great that we could, that he had the time to experiment and just to you know, to try things.
Yeah, well, yeah, like I said, I was a kid in the candy store and you were willing to, you know, some people would be like, oh, that old piece of crap, we're not going to try that. It's kind of beautiful. The world is so different now in so many ways, and yep. So are we as a whatever. It's yep. Weird. It's been a crazy 10 years, you know? But like,
yep.
Well, the one thing being the magic shop is gone. Water Music
well,
is gone.
They're all gone. Headgear's gone.
Headgear is gone where we worked. So, but that was the beauty, you know, just being able to try out all those things. And actually, I was thinking about this a little bit ago. I was trying to find a physical copy, but here I am looking at my own track list on Spotify. but I sort of remember the general order. I'll try to say it really fast. It's like, yeah, I got there at first. To the magic shop, and I said, all right, well, we should have Mike Zhang show up first. And then the other violators being Jesse Turbovich and Adam Granduciel, Adam Granofsky, but from, you know, now he's war on drugs. He was war on drugs then. You know, he's an old best friend of mine. But anyway, they were all going to show up later for various reasons. And I'm so glad we did it the way we did it, but basically, yeah, we started with that song Laughingstock, was definitely a ripper, you know, a ripper to start with, live with Mike and me. And then I think the second song we recorded was On Tour, which, you know, that was your daughter Bella's favorite song.
Yes. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And it's yeah. A beautiful song that we did, or if not, we did Baby's Arms. It was one or the other first, but it was like right. Live with Mike, definitely On Tour Live with Mike. And, so we had the guitar and the bed down, and then we did Baby's Arms. And, you know, you get to the middle of the week, and Mike left after we jammed I don't know how many songs. And then Mary showed up, Mary Lattimore, and she played harp on tour, which is, you know, that those hooks. She's played with me a lot, but there's a handful of times where her involvement has really, like just those melodies on the harp. You know what? I'm already realizing this is going to be a hard way to describe the whole thing, but there's some things we did to start. But oh, lastly, Meg Baird, toward the end of the week at Magic Shop, she was doing a show, and I had her sing back up on Baby's Arms at the end.
Yep.
She does the
beautiful, yeah,
and it's so beautiful, and
yeah,
like with that weird synth, we got Rob Laxo to trigger. You know, that Baby's Arms is still. I mean, in some KV category, that's my number one song. It should have been a hit. It should have been a hit, and I think one day it will be on some massive movie, and it will be. It's a beautiful song.
Yeah.
I listened to the record, you know, just to get reacquainted for various promo of this 10-year anniversary. And yeah, it really is my only sort of classic album. They're all classics in their way, but there's like a conventional thing combined with, you know, no one can touch it because it's us. but there's something about it. It's just a concise one record in a very classic way. Not too many long tangents. You know, Ghost Town is about 6 minutes. We even cut that. You know, that could have been longer, but we had Colby cut it down a little, and he cut it in a cool spot. And it's not, you know, a lot of cool input. Like, it's not like I told him exactly where to cut it, and it's great.
Hey, Kurt, what about where the band was at that point? You know, obviously over the years, there've been different iterations of the Violators, but you guys were in a pretty big groove then. I mean, what do you remember about working with those dudes at that time?
What I remember about working with those dudes? Well, they were my band we were a band from, you know, Mike Zhang joined the band in, man, I don't remember the exact date anymore. It was maybe 2007. And before that we had Michael Johnson, and he was in the band from, I don't know, 2004 to 2007. I could be getting those a little bit wrong, but basically, like, while I was making Childish Prodigy, it started with Michael Johnson, and then we got Mike Zhang came in, and I think the first thing he recorded was Hunchback for Childish Prodigy. You know, just local people in the Philly scene. And Michael Johnson, he plays drums on Jesus Fever, which was recorded back in the Childish Prodigy days. Around the same time I recorded He's All Right. But we needed singles, and I knew I had Jesus Fever in the back of my head. So anyway, the Violators were, you know, we were like, I said the other day, we were kind of like the suburban Ramones, because we were a gang. And sure, we lived in the city, but it was Philadelphia, so might as well call it the suburban Ramones. And we had a sound. I think in particular, Adam, like, we had a live thing, and sure, the whole war on drugs thing was happening, or had happened, like in 2008 or whatever, that record came out, which I played all over. And then I left the band, and then I invited Mike, who was a Violators drummer, I invited him to tour with us so I could open for the War on Drugs on the first European tour, the only tour I did with the drugs, and he joined. And then obviously he joined the War on Drugs, and I was like, hey, that's my drummer. And then, like, you know, it was very incestuous, let's just put it that way. And then I left the War on Drugs, and then Adam, there was like a second wave of the Violators where we'd still have shows. And then Adam, he's always been great, but I feel like he went to the crossroads, and everything he played was really solid. And I'm just so thankful that we got him on Smoke Ring. And there's really cool photos of it, like I said, with Sean. One of my favorite ones is like the big photo on the dust sleeve of us smoking cigarettes. You know, we were still young and didn't, you know, not afraid to smoke some butts. And I don't know, to the extent, I think that record, you know, and Jesse was always great, especially live. He was shy in the studio, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Until, you know, now he's on fire in the studio, but it took he would get a little shy behind the microphone. But he's definitely in there. He plays awesome slide and Puppet to the Man. But the Violators were always like this live entity, you know, and then we captured that in the studio for Smoke Ring. And to the extent that I assumed that Adam would, you know, once the records, I've assumed like he's just going to go and be the War on Drugs, because I was focusing on my thing, and he felt the magic of that record to the extent that he pushed back War on Drugs, whatever. He put out his EP. I forget what the EP is called now, but it was whatever EP came out after Wagon Wheel Blues. He's like, I'm just going to put out this EP, and I'm going to go on tour with you guys you know, he was like, I lock right in with Mike Zhang, and I want to wait till he's around to play with the War on Drugs or whatever. But so we got to tour this record proper, and I don't know. So that's like, it was just really magic. I remember I was really moved by Adam being there. We needed him bad. You know, he's playing like lead acoustic on Runner Ups. That's crucial, Adam. And like, yeah, that dreamy lead in the background of Society's
and
My
that
Friend.
That was all live. That was all live.
All live.
That's fantastic. And that's so great. I'll never forget that session. Wow.
Yeah, so I don't know. Yeah. And then he went on the initial tours with us until finally Slave Ambient came out. Like, I remember I had technically left the War on Drugs, and, or, you know, that was always a friend thing anyway. We always just helped each other where we could. But I remember I was so grateful and moved. I was like, hey, well, listen, if you want me to play on any on your new recordings, I will. So I'm proud I played on Slave Ambient, just a couple of songs, the War on Drugs album. It's just like as a guest, but I love that record. And yeah, I don't know. That was even the way that I said that Smoke Ring was like kind of the classic conventional album, that we were also sort of a classic conventional band then. And, you know, I feel like every record there has been evolving, and, you know, the process, the recording process changed, and, you know, that's about, you know, whatever. Oh, okay. Track two that we worked on was Ghost Town, actually, because if you think about it, Laughingstock is like heavy acoustics, you know, processed acoustics through amps and rocking, and then you hear Ghost Town's got the same kind of processed acoustics droning on.
Right.
And Mary plays the harp on that one too, those melodies, those harp melodies. Yeah, and then we did On Tour and
then, but also, now, correct me if I'm wrong, but you sang a lot of those vocals live. I mean, we went for vocals too, right? Which I thought was fantastic.
Yeah, the vocals live, for sure. I remember On Tour and Baby's Arms, I sang after. I mean, I definitely sang them. Well, I definitely tried to sing On Tour live, maybe. But that was focusing on the vocals. And then towards the end, we realized that's best. And to this day, it's still the best. Yeah, like Smoke Ring for My Halo, the title track, which we recorded at Water Music. That's a live vocal. Runner-ups, that's a live vocal.
Runners-up.
That's when all the band is playing together. Violators are all playing live. When Adam showed up and like all the band reconvened and it was just Violator's vibe, it was just totally awesome and natural, real moment captured and captured on photo too by Sean Brackbill. Like, I don't know, it was just a magic time and I love it. That other cool thing about Water was the very end of Ghost Town. Most of it we recorded at Magic Shop, but the very last thing we did at Water, I feel like, before we had to pack up and leave, was I did the last verse. Remember, after all that feedback, the last verse of Ghost Town comes in. It's like, when I'm drinking, I get to joking.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Then I'm laughing, falling down. I was going to say who I'm ripping off, but I'm not going to. But anyway, yeah, it's so much magic. Another last thing we did was The Creature. Like I sang that one live too, and then I just remember adding some Nashville strung acoustic guitar, like just last minute. We were just filling up those tracks fast, and like we got so much done in those first 2 weeks. And then then you came back down to Minor Street after I had a kid, and then we had to keep going in sort of after that. But man, just so many different styles of songs we captured, you know?
Yeah. And you know, it's fantastic because at the end of the day, we recorded like 15 songs or 15 or 16. And this is another one that I've talked to Kurt about over the years. But, you know, one of my favorite songs of the ones we cut were It's All Right, which I think is just such a great, it's just a banger. And, you know, basically towards the end of the record, I realized it wasn't going to be on the album. And I was a little bit crushed, but not totally, because I knew it would be out sometime. And my feeling is, like, I love it when B-sides are A-sides, you know, like when the record comes out and then you add extra tracks later and they're great.
The EP, yeah.
And I felt like the EP was all A-sides too. It was a record and a half.
No, totally. I agree. And it's cool that, I mean, we wanted to put out one and a half album, you know, that's what we wanted to do. And Chris Lombardi, mogul at Matador Records, he said it should be one record. It's got to be concise, you know, and which was a smart move. The label's input was helpful. At times it was frustrating, you know, in a good way, because it should be, really. But there was definitely some push and pull. There was, you know, they asked, for instance, they wanted a rocker. And yeah, in your mind, we had a rocker in a couple jams, one being Life's a Beach, two being, you know, the song you just mentioned, It's All Right.
It's All Right.
Yeah. But they thought it was too mellow or something. They asked for a rocker. So the first thing I did was I recorded, I brought the Violators up. I remember it was right after we opened for a Pavement reunion in Philly as well, to get all Matador. And I had to, it was, it took, you know, I don't know. I told people last minute, some in the band, I remember being a little cranky to get up there, but they, let's say they all got up there and, we did Puppet to the Man, and that was a hell of a rocker. But I also added, I was like, all right, well, if you want a rocker, I'm going to give you this other song that I love. And in a way, it's just like the deepest song on the record. We know it's Jay Maskus's and Kim Gordon's favorite is, Society Is My Friend, which we did another time up at Biscotine, Jay Maskus's studio. We started it there.
That's right.
And then
That's
we right. ended it, me and you, while we're finally mixing the record, somewhere in Brooklyn, Nat's place.
Oh, Fluxivity. That's Fluxivity. Another place that's gone.
Yep.
Oh, and, God.
And, like, we had, like, all the band, like, Mike Zhang's got killer drums playing through Jay's drum kit. Adam is playing amazing affected guitar. We have Jay's Mellotron that I played, and it's, you know, 12-string acoustic, and but then, like, the final vocal and live acoustic that I sang and played to was literally done in mixing, like in that small concrete room.
Yeah, yeah. That
and
was
add a little
room.
Slide guitar trippy at the end. And man, oh that God. Song is that song is just so magic.
Can I just say that really quick? Kurt, you guys played Pitchfork that on that after Smoke Rings, right?
Mm-hmm.
So me and Sharon flew over there, and I remember taking pictures of you guys from the side of the stage, and that was such a great set. You guys shredded. I mean, you guys played so great. I just remember Adam was so pumped up. Mike was pumped up.
Yeah, there's some footage. Go ahead. Sorry. Good.
No, but I mean, and I would be on the side of the stage taking pictures and then look out to the audience, and it was fantastic. The audience was so into it. And I just, we came back from Chicago, and we were just so stoked on that. We were just so fucking psyched at how great you guys played. It was really, it was an electric time for you guys. But I mean, it was a great time. The energy was like fantastic.
Thank you. No, I felt that electricity, and also, yeah, we should note that like the live show didn't sound like the Smoke Ring for my Halo album either. We were definitely shredded live, you know.
Yeah,
it was just this whole other thing once you have the electricity. Me in particular, I've always been pretty elusive to technology. So once there's a bunch of amplifiers and pedals in front of me and a guitar, there's no way it's going to sound like it did, you know, with under other people's guidance in the studio, you know. Like,
wait, is that me?
Well, no. Yeah, you and everybody, you know, or even just the moment capture.
Hey, wait a minute.
Hey. I did actually want to, you talked about guidance in the studio and, you know, John's openness. But I mean, John, can you talk a little bit generally about how you approach a session with Kurt or really anybody in terms of, you know, letting things evolve, experimenting? Like, what's your studio vibe?
Well, it's different for every artist. I'll give you a perfect example. Thurston Moore, during The Eternal, when they were tracking a song a bunch of times, I came out to ask him something, and he was like, what do you want? And I was like, okay, I'll go back in the control room. You know what I mean? So it's different with everybody. And you know, but with and with the younger artists, obviously, maybe they do need a little guidance with, you know, songs and maybe, you know, keys and stuff like that. Maybe, you know, they're not singing in the right key. It sounds weird. But with Kurt, I mean, and I had listened to his previous records. I mean, this was his is it Smoke Ring's your fourth or fifth record?
Smoke Ring, I mean, it's you could say it's my second official full length, but there are two like compilations.
Yeah, previous.
You know,
right,
there's
okay,
like,
okay.
Yeah, there's two compilations of like home recordings before then. So it was like, you know, you could say it's my fourth album or third and a half.
Right, right. Well, we established pretty early on in the record that he did know what he wanted, or he did know what he was looking for. So my thing was I learned early on, it's just let's let him go and try to help move everything in the right direction and just kind of enjoy the creativity, you know? And I, once that first day we got past it and that the one song that I thought he was writing, actually we got in there and tracked it and came out great. I was like, I think we're going to be great. And you know, I love the fact that there was a freeness in the studio to create a little bit of magic there, that not everything was so rehearsed that it was very strict. But no, I think it was just, yeah, trying to just help everybody get to where they wanted to go. It was, you know, but like I said, every record's different. It's not like, you know, it's not like the same hat or the same chores on every record, you know?
Did it evolve over working with even Kurt more? Like, was this record specific in certain ways where that evolved and changed as time went on?
Oh yeah, it always changes, man.
Everything changes. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, a couple things that came to mind. One, I want to say, because I said it earlier, Jesse was shy in the studio, but still, like when we played live with the band, yeah, like his guitar, like on, you know, his like spacey rhythm guitars on songs like Runner Ups and Smoke Ring for My Halo, you know, that the Violators live sound was there, which was cool. Also, yeah, like I think that sound evolved within this record, and then it of course evolved with Waking on a Pretty Days. But so we did those 2 weeks, and then I had the kid, and then you came down to Minor Street where we, I wrote, I mean, I was just evolving. I had a kid, and then I remember you made a joke, Tom. Sorry, Tom. I call you Tom. Tom and John. I got two people I love in my life, Toms and Johns. But John, you said I think it was you. You're like, get ready. You're going to go. You're going to have a kid, and all of a sudden you're going to write all these dad songs. I'm like, nah, yeah. I'll never do that. And then like yeah. I have my kid, and like a couple days later I wrote In My Time. You know, which yeah. is totally reflective dad type of song. And like we took that to Minor Street. I recorded the beginning bits with Jeff Ziegler. So we had Jesus Fever and we had In My Time, which were both leaning towards singles, you know, and they both were singles. But then we just added all this cool stuff to them at Minor Street, like cool electric guitars through his that phaser, that Mutron biphase, things like that, and I don't know, we were just tightening up the sound. We added like extra noise with the band, a lot of band overdubs there, you know, Violators, and then yeah, I don't know, then next thing you know we're up at Headgear doing Puppet to the Man, which was another evolution of the sound, and Society is My Friend. That these are all over months' time, like between tours. Or I remember we played a show up in Canada, and then we met you at Jay's, you know, in
right
wherever the
right.
hell he lives, and
Northampton.
Yeah, I don't know. The whole record itself was an evolution. I think it always is. And by the time we got to Waken, I had those like longer songs in my mind, and we did a lot of programming to a drum machine before we even got the band, because I knew I wasn't going to sit there and teach the whole band
right.
these parts, you know, much to the whole crew's chagrin. They had to sit and wait, and that's fine because that's a beautiful record too. But yeah, whatever.
But also the thing with Smoke Rings was, you know, over the course of time, maybe it was 6 months or something, but honestly, how much did we work? We didn't work that much. We only worked like, you know, maybe a month and a half on it or something, you know, over the course of the 6 months. It wasn't like we were in the studio every day, like losing our minds.
No.
We would come in for a few days, for a week, and then, you know, then take, you had your daughter and, so it never felt like, oh my God, we've been in the studio so long. In fact, we went to so many different places. I mean, you just named five different studios. That every time we showed up at a new place, there was like a fresher and fun environment. You know, it was like just, you know, Headgear was awesome because it was in Williamsburg. Water Music was awesome because you had the big outdoors. You could grill. You could do whatever you want. Jay's Place is awesome because it's, you know, it's Biscotine. It's Jay's Place. It was fun being up there with him.
Yeah.
So every studio had a different character, and we rolled in and just really enjoyed it.
Totally. Yeah, and we even mixed it multiple places too. Like, we mixed some at Biscotine. We mixed some at Headgear. We mixed, I don't even know. I don't. We mixed.
You remember the last night of mixing? I'll never forget this one either. Where we were supposed to have Water Music to finish right before mastering, and Water Music accidentally double booked us.
Yeah.
So we couldn't get in there until like 10 o'clock at night. And I was so mad because I was like a main client there, and he turned out to give the other clients the, you know, the day, and kind of, I mean, not fucked us over, but it wasn't great. I mean,
but yeah.
You know, I should have gotten priority since I worked there for like, you know, 20 years or something. And I remember it was like midnight, and we're working, and, you know, we're going to be working until 8 in the morning or 7 in the morning. And the owner comes in and says, oh, by the way, I just wanted to ask, who am I billing this to you? Who am I billing this to? And I looked at him and went, you're not billing this.
Yeah.
And he went, and I was very serious. I didn't smile or anything. I was like, you're not billing this. And he went, oh, okay. And just walked out of the room. Like, we didn't pay for that night because I was so mad at him.
Oh, yeah. Like, and, yeah. We had a last minute mixing session
there.
Like, yeah. After he had basically screwed us.
Yeah.
And then he's like, who am I billing for this? And he's like, oh, okay.
It was so good. It's like one of the few times I've ever been tough guy with a studio owner, but I was so mad at him. But I was also mad because we were going to work until 6 in the morning and we were mastering the next day. That was the thing. It was like such a crucial point.
It was crucial.
But we got it done.
Yeah, we got it done. Funny.
This is slightly off topic, but, you know, we've got a few records that we're focused on next year, including the fucked up record David Comes to Life. And you had mentioned all the time you guys spent with Jay, and I just remember you, and then you sang on that record. I just remember that era, Kurt, being really fun and really, like, you know, a lot of great people. Like, what do you remember about the time? Not necessarily any of those specifically, but like...
Yeah, no, it's true. there was like a total awesome scene going on. It's surreal to talk about now because, you know, there's no live music even. But, you know, there will be again. But still, there was, yeah, Matador and Beggars is a real family. But, you know, let's say Matador in particular. Yeah, I mean, while I was mixing that record, yeah, I remember I was still, I don't want to say in the hot seat, but in a way I was. And in between there, when they had the Matador 21 thing, you know? I just started being friends with Kim Gordon, who was a hero. And she, not only was she my friend, she was a big fan for a second with that one. I mean, she's still a fan, but I'm saying I was like her favorite music for a second. And I remember hanging with everybody at Matador 21. I had toured with Effed Up early on. In fact, that was the last long tour I did before I did Smoke Ring. But anyway, yeah, I remember at Matador 21, I had just recorded Puppet to the Man and Society's My Friend, and they just got sent them, and they were, you know, their requests for some rockers or whatever. I just know that I wasn't fully, they didn't know exactly what I was going to do yet, per se. So, and I didn't know everybody as well then, and I looked up to everybody like they were rock stars, like Gerard, etc., and I still do, but... Yeah, and there's a lot of people, those joint festivals or whatever, you know, so many ways to meet the bands on the label, not even just the bands, like just making friends with, you know, like Claire, product manager, Claire Taylor, and everybody, you know, everybody, Mike V, Robbie, you, like everybody was like, there's all kinds of stuff going on, really. I don't know. It was exciting, you know. I feel like I was a teenager then almost, but really I was in my 30s. I feel like in that era, what is that, 2010, 11? I feel like 30s were the 20s then, you know? So maybe now I'm 30.
Yeah, I had the same thing though, because I remember like I would drag my daughter, Sarah, who's now 33. I mean, I'd drag her up to the offices and, you know, we would visit and would go out. What?
No, yeah, totally. I'm saying, oh, yeah.
Yeah. And she would hang and she became friends with, like, you know, just whatever. It just seemed very inclusive. Everybody was friends with everybody and super nice and super excited about it.
Yeah, but as far as singing on David Comes to Life, yeah, I remember I think I was mixing with John, you know, right? And I just went over to another studio.
Oh, right.
Like, just ran over there. There was all kinds of things happening. You know, studios existed. And you could hop from one to the other if you wanted. Drinking lots of beer, too. That was nice.
Yeah, always lots of beer. I mean, you guys have honestly run through so much of what, you know, we didn't have to ask any questions because you basically hit it all. I mean, is there anything else... if it's a song or just anything else that you would want to touch on when it comes to Smoke Ring that you want, you know, for posterity here to recollect or to, I don't know, it's open.
I mean, you know, honestly, considering I had never worked with Kurt or the guys and, you know, they were Philly, I was New York, and, you know, we all got thrown in the room together. I mean, honestly, that record is magical. Really just so many great things happened. And it wasn't like we tried to make them happen. It just happened. You know, the songs ended up being so great. He sang great. The band played great. We really had a fun time experimenting with sounds. I mean, Baby's Arms just is so beautiful. I mean, and it doesn't sound like anything else. And just the way he floats on top of that with his vocal. And then Meg at the end. A fun fact about Meg, she unknowingly, not knowing it was me, kicked me in the ass at Union Pool because my computer bag was too big and she couldn't get by me after opening up for somebody.
I love it.
So she pushed through me and then turned around and kicked me in the ass and never realized it was me until years ago. Anyway, fun fact.
I love
that. But I knew it was her. But no, I think it was, and Mary, and you know, honestly, I've used Mary... you know, over the years a few times because she's just so great. And it was great to meet everybody, you know, and obviously a big fan of Kurt. You know, to this day, I went back and listened to Smoke Rings maybe 3 or 4 months ago. Just I was in the car driving And it was just so great to listen to it. And honestly, you can't minimize the fact that the EP that came out 9 months after is so fucking solid that, you know, there were no B-sides. I said it before, but I'll say it again. They're all like just A-sides. But no, it was a, you know, listen, I when you do this for a long amount of time, you know, that's a magical period. I'll never forget making that record, you know, but you can't say that. You can't say that about every record, but also some records you feel wonderful about just don't happen. So it's wonderful to see how this record just opened a door to him that he kept kicking through with Waken and the next records. You know, it's just, it's really wonderful. I can't be more stoked to have been involved.
Yeah, well, couldn't have done it without you, John. That's for sure.
Hey, do we think Kim thought I fucked it up, or do you? Or do we think she? I got the thumbs up from her.
Well, I mean, she didn't think she didn't think you fucked it up, but I heard that she gets obsessive, you know, and I mean, it didn't sound like Childish Prodigy. Maybe, I don't know if she likes one better than the other. You know, right. I'll have to ask her. But the beauty is that doesn't even matter because it's a classic.
Yeah, exactly. exactly.
But yeah, and also the title track, Smoke Ring for My Halo, that was, I feel like that might have been the moment where the Violators thing in the studio clicked and you sort of realized, you know, the whole Atom Magic, etc. Because that's very, it reminds me of like sort of Stonesy Waiting on a Friend or something, but, you know, with a folky drive, and which was kind of like, I don't know, my kind of obsession at the time. And I don't know, like calling that song, making that song the title track was important because it is just a couple chords and it's got good vibes, but I feel like you could miss it, you know, if you weren't paying attention. And something about it is like a subtle, you know, we keep saying magic, you know, forget it. But like, yeah, whatever. I think that the collection of songs on there, like sums that record up. And the fact that we didn't put out a record and a half, that would have probably been career suicide. And like the EP, like you had favorite songs like Life's a Beach and It's All Right. And I still to this day know that the right songs are on there, you know?
Yeah.
Like, because you know, it's just a vibe thing. And, so we got,
there were no wrong songs to go on the record.
Hey,
you know what I mean?
And we should say, we're definitely putting out, an EP. I'm sorry. We're putting out a full length worth of, let's just say some really solid, B-sides and other, you know, there's tons of stuff, tons of magic. God damn it. We got to edit out some of these magics, by the way.
You said it again.
Edit out that magic.
You said it again.
yeah, I don't, there's going to be another record, you know, like in honor of this record coming out. Okay. That's all.
Can I say one other thing?
You could say a million things because we'd be getting nerdy. So,
oh boy, I know. But for the 10-year anniversary of the release of Smoke Rings, that morning I woke up to a Facebook memory, and it was 10 years ago. And my little Facebook memory is, today is the release of Kurt Vile's Smoke Ring for My Halo. Oh yeah. And I said, if you haven't heard of Kurt Vile yet, you should really check him out. This record's fantastic. It's going to blow your fucking mind. And it was so great to see that on the Monday of the anniversary, because I believed when the record came out that it would be just great, you know, because I believed it was great. And it was so fun to see, you know, fast forward 10 years, you're killing it. You're a monster.
Well,
it's magic.
I've been in hiding in here, but I love it. I love it. I love not leaving the house at the moment. I'm taking advantage of that and you know, trying to figure out tons of music over here. But also, lastly, I want to say that you know who became a big fan after he had mastered the record, so it could only be one person, Greg Colby, And I remember when we mastered the next record, Waken, he was like, let's get a picture. And I was like, hey, he didn't ask for a picture last time. He's like, that's because you weren't a star yet. You know, he didn't say quite that. But basically, he like fell in love with that record. Like after the fact, right? Yeah. He told me.
Yeah. Yeah.
He told me.
No, he's a big fan.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he's a big fan. He's funny.
He's a legend.
You know, he is. Did you guys take the picture in front of the John Lennon note?
No.
Okay, he's got the little letter from John Lennon from the rock and roll record.
Yeah, he's
framed.
He's just like, hey, just a wee bit of bass. You know, it's just like a note to say, add some bass.
Yeah,
big deal.
Yeah, yeah.
From John Lennon, big deal. We'll give him some bass. Just kidding. I love you. Love you.
Oh my God.
You guys have been great, and I'm not pulling the plug, but you know, it's really fun to hear, like, cause you know, just knowing your relationship, and I've always heard how much fun this was as a record to make. So hearing you guys reminisce about it, is really, really cool.
Yeah. We'll do it again, for Waken in a couple years. So that's right around the corner.
All right. 2 years. Right. And then a second record in a row for me and second baby.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I had babies for both of your records. But your baby record.
He had to stop working with me because he didn't want to have more than two kids.
Yeah, if something happens, you know, maybe we'll work again if I get her pregnant again.
You know, if you ever want another kid, let me know. I'm around.
Okay.
Last thing, Kurt, Philly guy. Yep. Any thoughts on Bardo Pond that you would care to share? We're going to do some.
Why?
Because we're going to do some reissues of their whole catalog.
Right, Bardo.
Bardo Pond are awesome. I honestly saw them open for, was it Modest Mouse, when I was a teenager, and I didn't get it at the time. They seemed extra stoned. Then, you know, later, flash forward, I was in the scene, and we were playing shows together, and they were awesome. And they were also early supporters of when Mike Zhang joined the band. And Mike Zhang used to be in Bardo Pond as well, but... The Violators, you know, once we had like Hunchback in our repertoire and some other jams, we would play like on the indie, like not the indie, like the like bookstore and DIY show circuit. And I just remember when the Violators really clicked, those guys sort of telling me and being into it. I also remember the opening of Johnny Brenda's. They played an early show that just shredded. They're in the scene, man. They've been in the scene way longer than I have. Let's put it that way. They rule.
All right, guys. John Aniello, Kurt Vile.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining Matador's Revisionist History Podcast. And it's been really cool to listen to you guys reminisce, man.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Good seeing you, Kurt. Good seeing you, Gabe.
Good seeing you.